As Jeff said, I've had multiple experiences. I'll give you a little bit of background. I was born in Los Angeles in 1958 in September. So my father was a Los Angeles policeman, and my mother was a homemaker. My father was Jewish, and my mother LDS. Pioneer stock on both sides of the family. That was kind of the family joke in our family. My father had agreed with my mother to raise the kids LDS, though I was the kid who always wanted to be Jewish. So I find that kind of humorous even now. So I was always interested in the culture and the history, and I loved talking to my grandmother. As a small child, I was sick. I was in the hospital about my first 2 years of life. And probably that's where some things started, but I don't have any memories of, except that I don't like being in hospitals. When I was around 3 years old, as a very young child, I lived in the hills of Los Angeles. It's called Montecito Heights. We just called it the hill. There used to be rabbits in those days and animals, and I just was a really young child. Many of the people that lived on the place we called the hill were other policemen, were friends of my father's. So probably a pretty safe neighborhood. There was about six or seven families who were Los Angeles policemen. One of these friends who lived on the circle, right around the circle, had a pool in his front yard. And I didn't know how to swim. My mother, who was raised here in the Salt Lake area, never learned to swim because of the Great Salt Lake. So what I would do is I would go around the edges of pools. And I was around three, as best as I can recollect. I really didn't know how old I was. I was going around this pool. It was a hot day in California. I have no idea what time of the year it was, but I was going around the edge of the pool, and when I got towards the deep end, I slipped underneath. And when I slipped underneath the water, I saw the bubbles coming out of my mouth. And the next thing I knew, I was in this huge room. It was big, it was beautiful. I could see that there were pillars in the room. And I'm just going to say this, for me, I was sitting on my Heavenly Father's lap. And he was speaking to me, telling me that I had had kind of a rough time during my earth journey so far. He told me that I could stay, that I could stay where I was, and I was at choice. It was my choice either way. I felt an immense love. I just knew that I was loved. I knew my journey wasn't over yet. But as I kind of sat there and listened, and then later things shifted a little bit. So when I was a child, the only thing we had that was a TV was black and white. And there was this big screen, and I could see through the screen. It looked like a screen to me. It looked like a big window. And there was a man talking to me, and I know his name to be Jesus. And he was talking to me about my life and that I was at choice. And I just felt loved. Looking through this, I could see the whole universe. I could see the stars and the planets. And it was in color. And I was going, wow, this is really cool. As he was talking to me, I could see the earth in the distance. As he was talking to me, it got closer and closer. And I thought, wow, I've never seen anything like this before. I was kind of astonished. But the earth, it was like this big lens, and the earth got closer and closer. And soon there was that pool. And I saw the pool as the screen kind of like a big zoom lens. As it got closer, I could see the pool. I could see that there were these teenage girls laying out next to the pool. I could see my family in the pool, my mother, my father. I had an older sister and an older brother. And actually, they did an extreme close-up. My mother and my father, and then my brother and sister. And at that point, I was asked, okay, you have a choice. You can stay here or you'll go back. And in that moment, I could also see a body in the pool. And I said, I'll go back. And in the moment I made that decision, I heard my name being called. I said, where's Brian? Where's Brian? And those were those two teenage girls. Now, I don't know how long I was underwater. Could have been 10 seconds. You know, there's no time on the other side of the place that I was, which to me, that was heaven. I didn't really have a term for it. It was just where I went. But I heard my name being called. And in the next moment, I was back in my body and my hands were up like this in the water. And these two girls reached in and pulled me out. That was that experience. I don't know how old. A few years later, our family moved. And I went to my mom one day and I said, because I wanted to talk about it. I just came up, I wanted to talk. And I said, do you remember when I drowned in the pool? And she goes, you never drowned. And I went, oh, okay. And I go, well, I guess I'm not going to talk about that. Many years later, I talked to my mom again and she said, oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember. And then we could had opened up the conversation a little bit. Didn't really talk about it for many years. I had this thing with water as a child. I've had a lot of experiences where, as I will call it, divine intervention played a role in my life. The LA Policeman's Country Club was a police academy where families would go and we would swim and just have fun. There was this fountain, and today the fountain's filled in. But there was a little fountain, and it had an outer rim and an inner fountain with those green leaves in the center. I was waiting for my parents. It was at night, and I was a curious child. There was a stick, and I reached for the stick, and I fell in the water. And I still couldn't swim at this point in my life. And I was under the water for a while. Well, I was looking up at those green leaves. The next thing I knew was someone came over and they reached in and pulled me out. And I was soaking wet. And he kind of scolded me in a friendly, loving way. That's the only way I can picture it. And he was dressed like a policeman. I kind of look back at this incident and I have a feeling he wasn't really a policeman. Just an angel in policeman's clothing. Because he scolded me and said, you're really curious sometimes. And he basically said, someone won't always be there for you when you're doing these types of things. And I went, oh, okay. And I was probably 5 or 6 at this point in my life. I heard some noises this way, and I looked this way, and then I looked back, and the man was gone. And even today, when I've gone back to this fountain, right next to the fountain is where the policemen shoot their guns. So there's like a 40, 50 feet sidewalk that goes this way. So he couldn't have just disappeared. Well, he did disappear, but meaning he wasn't anywhere in my peripheral vision that I could see. And the next moment I know, here comes my brother. And my brother knew, because he was supposed to watch me, that he wasn't watching me and I was all wet, that he was in trouble. Because then my parents came, and suffice it to say, my brother got in trouble for that. And they just said, you know, what are you doing? You're all wet. And then I had to explain. And the only other experience I'll share is that I loved going to the beach with my family as a child. And my parents, my mother would warn me to be careful at the riptides. This is Newport Beach was our favorite beach to go to. And on many occasions, I would go down in the water. And there was one occasion I remember where I was down in the water, and it was riptide day. And I was a child. I really didn't pay. I didn't know what those flags meant. I do later on. And I was in the water. And one moment I was in the water. And the next moment I was on the beach. And when I walked home to where we were staying, I was all sandy and stuff. And my mom just kind of said, you weren't supposed to go in the water. So I kind of got in trouble with that. But I still knew that day there was some type of intervention. Because anyone who's ever been in riptides, you usually get pulled out into the ocean. And you usually don't come back. So it wasn't my day. So I'll fast forward. One of the things I started noticing, I'll talk about gifts just for a moment. When I was around 15, I started noticing that I could see light around people. Some people call that an aura or a countenance. For many years, I was just happy to see it. I never would go up to people and say, hey. When I was 19, I actually went and served an LDS mission back east. Had some other experiences where I'd be warned I've always been able to hear like a voice of warning, and it would always be very clear. And it wasn't my voice. It was clearly somebody else's voice who would say, stop, or don't go there, or just be careful. And I learned to listen to the voice most of the time. I get that's part of one of my lessons that I learned on my last experience. When I was out in the mission field, my companion was speaking, and someone came up to him afterward and said, wow, your countenance was beautiful. And I went, wow, you see it too. And at that point, we had about a four-hour discussion about that, because I'd never known anyone else in my life who could see that. It's just growing up at a time where I just didn't talk about those things. As a child, sometimes I would see things like watching scary movies at night, and I had really bad nightmares and stuff, and my parents just had a time enough with that, let alone other things that happened in my life, that, you know, I really didn't want to have to go to a psychiatrist, because sometimes my parents would say, do you want to go talk to somebody? And I'd say, no, just because there wasn't an openness to talk about these things. As I got older, I'll just say that when I was in my late 20s, I had an experience where I broke up with a girl who I'd wanted to marry, and I was in deep pain. I was very depressed. I really didn't want to live anymore. I took a moment, got down on my knees. I heard a notion that if I could pray, and so I prayed and kind of basically told God that either the pain gets taken away or I'm not going to be around tomorrow. And so that night I relived the experience I had as a child, except this time it was a lot. Maybe as a child, if it was like this much I saw, it was like this much I saw. All of a sudden, there were friends and relatives. It was basically the same experience, except I was a little older. I was an adult. I saw a lot more. I saw more of the universe, which is really beautiful. Sometimes I wish I could have just stood there about 10 seconds longer. I've always had a thing where I love to look at the stars and look up this way. And it's so different to be from that perspective, looking out and seeing the Earth and other planets and things. So I've always been a stargazer. So I relived that experience. The next morning I woke up, didn't feel bad anymore, didn't really care for the girl anymore. It was a miracle. To me, that was a miracle. That was a huge experience for me, to relive that experience I'd had as a young child, and to realize that I really did have the experience. It just wasn't a one-time deal. And that gave me some oomph in my life to go on. I'd read some books on near-death experiences, like Melvin Morse. I'd read his book about children and actually contacted his office, but though I never heard back from them, I'd love to be interviewed, but no one contacted me. So I'll fast forward in 1997 and moved to Utah. The man upstairs tapped me on the shoulder and said, I'd like you to move to Utah. And I went, are you nuts? I loved living in Southern California. I worked in the entertainment business for many years. I loved what I was doing. I have one friend in Utah. I saw no reason for moving here. But I later got a confirmation that I was supposed to move here, so I did. I started coming to IAN meetings when I was first here in 1997 and met some people. And started going a class at BYU. I don't know if that was 98, I think, or 97, that class we went to. There was a graduate class where they were discussing the near-death experience from the religious side as well as from the science side. And so it was really fascinating to kind of sit at the back with other friends who were experiencers and to just see what these honor students thought of the near-death experience. And they brought in other speakers. And towards the end of the class, we were going to have a panel. Sort of excited, a part of me. And I ended up getting a job because that was more important. My savings was running out when I first moved here. I think one of the best experiences is one of the friends who came to class who was already an experiencer. I connected to some things that I just thought had to do with me. I don't balance a checkbook. I've always done it in my head. Watches don't work on me. I don't wear a watch. I have watches. They work great on my desk, my dresser at home. But on me, they don't work. They will stop working. I can change the battery, and it just, and I know that has to do with crossing over and magnetics and things. But some things were shared with me that I keyed in. Oh, this, maybe this has to do with having crossed over. In 1999, I went to a business convention in Palm Springs, and I had driven down there. Someone had driven with me, and he was a musician. I went to this place because I had some ideas that I wanted to create inventions out of. And I had gone down in August my first time, and then I went back and staffed. It was a beautiful experience. So I went back in December of 1999. My boss gave me the time off work. That wasn't a problem. It was a week long. One of the things they let me do is they let me videotape the different classes with my video camera. So on the way back, I had planned, this was a Sunday, and I had planned to stay over on a Monday and then to drive back. The person who went with me, he said, you know, I can't afford to stay another day. Let's leave today. And I was thinking, oh, I don't, you know, I kind of struggle with that. Now, there was a part of me, and I can actually, as clear as day, remember this, is that I received some type of prompting that said, don't go. And I was milling it around a little bit, and I decided not to stay because of the other person said, hey, I can't afford to stay another day. And I said, oh. So when we left on Sunday afternoon, it was around December 13th, I was driving, and I drove for about 8 hours as far as I can recollect. All I remember that day really is driving in southern Utah and how beautiful that is. And it was a beautiful day as far as I can remember. I knew when we were going up towards Provo, at that time I lived in Provo, and we heard that there was bad weather coming. Really the only other memory I have is opening the doors of a convenience store. And from what someone told me later, that was Fillmore. The other person that drove with me, I'll just say his name is Fred for lack of not remembering. He had slept the whole way from Palm Springs, I guess all the way to Fillmore. And then I couldn't drive anymore. So from what he told me, we traded. The next thing that happened, I kind of have two recollections. But most of it happened after I woke up in the hospital. Basically what happened is he fell asleep at the wheel. I was asleep. I was in a Datsun pickup truck. I had a moonroof on this truck, and the lock broke. So I wired it shut with baling wire so it wouldn't open. Basically what happened is he fell asleep. He woke up, overcorrected the vehicle. It did donuts. It was snowing. Just was starting to snow, kind of snow and rain and mud. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. I did donuts across the pavement. When it got to the middle, we were headed northbound. The car was going into the medium, headed south, and flipped. And at that point, I went out the moonroof. The only thing I remember once I woke up was seeing from a very high perspective, like up in the air, this vehicle rolling across the medium. About 10 days later, I woke up in the hospital. When I was unconscious, I had this dream that I was in. One side of the dream was I was in a hospital, and people were yelling and screaming at me saying, who are you? What are you doing here? And I didn't know. And I was just shocked because they were yelling at me. It really was offensive to me. In fact, and then on the other side of the dream, I was in a very beautiful green, the most beautiful green grass I've ever seen. Actually, I'd seen it before, but I didn't realize I was having this duality in my space. The sky was blue, the most beautiful blue I've ever seen. There were trees. There was this big white house. I knew this place. There was a familiarity about this place I was at. You know, I wasn't clear where it was. I just was, wow, it was peaceful. I was at peace there. And then I had this other experience. So I thought the peaceful place was my reality. At some point, I became conscious. I don't know how long, people would come and visit me. And a lot of people said they couldn't recognize who I was. So they didn't talk because they were in shock because my body looked pretty beat up from what I've heard. I don't have any pictures except from a very high place, which I'll talk about in a moment. So I knew when I became conscious, I had audio but no video. I could hear people talk, and if they spoke to me, I could remember they had spoken to me. To this day, I can remember those people. But if they didn't, because they didn't have video, I don't know that they were there. When I first woke up, I was intubated. There was a tube down my throat. I went to pull it out, and it hurt really bad. Bad enough that I went unconscious. The next time I woke up, and I don't know how long that had been, when I woke up, I was on a full respirator. They had taken the tube out. Someone came in and said, "We're really happy to see you." And I just said, "What am I doing here?" At that point, I didn't really know my name. Someone had to come in and tell me what happened. You were in a car accident. I don't call it that. I call it a learning experience. Call it a car incident. Now, there are two versions of the story. My friend Fred, who came and visited me in the hospital when I became conscious, said the car spun. I left the vehicle. Some of the things he didn't tell me, I found out later in a police report. He didn't tell me I went from shoulder to shoulder. Then my arms, I had some road rash that I still occasionally. The police report said I left at one point and landed in the gravel. Now, my version of the story is that I left the vehicle and the angels caught me. They healed 85% of my injuries, which during my healing process I learned about. I was shown what happened in my healing process. My healing process, initially, I would see my doctor 3 times a week once I got out of the care facility. So I was in the hospital about 10 days, care facility 6 weeks. I would go to my doctor, and then I would go to another friend of mine who, basically, I'll just call it, it was trauma therapy, to release the trauma that my body held in it. And it was in some of those sessions that I would relive, like, let's say, in an hour and a half session, I'd relive about a couple seconds of what happened. And so I did this for many years. And that's where the story kind of unfolds a little bit. Now, I will share with you that when I was in the bed, I remember being in the top of my room, my hospital room, very clearly. There are these things I started remembering once I became conscious. And one of the things I clearly remember that I was up in my hospital room. I had a guide with me. That's his official title. He actually had a name. I know who he is now, but that's kind of not important. So we were having a conversation. He said, "It's time for you to get back in your body." And I said, "Well, A, that's not me." And I didn't agree to this. No, I'm not getting back into that body. I don't care. I don't care what you're telling me. And he goes, I said, "Let's go back. Let's go back and talk to the people," because I didn't agree to this. And he's saying, "No, you did." And no, it's too late. And what he said to me, time was running out. I didn't have a concept of time, because where I came from, there wasn't time. Time is earthly. It's not in that other place. And I knew I'd come from another place. I just didn't know how much I was going to remember from that other place. And it's kind of like I remember coming back. I've remembered going over there. I've remembered coming back. But there's a middle part I'm still remembering. It's really kind of an interesting experience. The other thing I remembered while I'm up in the room is he kind of, and some of this came in stages. It wasn't all immediate. I would get a glimpse, and then time would go on. And one day I was watching something on TV where someone had a halo on. Now, I couldn't watch the show because it freaked me out. It was just too much. Then I remembered being in other parts of the hospital. So basically what he said to me, and he said, "I'll tell you what, why don't you go find yourself? And when you find yourself, come and get me. I'll be right here." Initially, when I flew out, I had a skull fracture with a bruise on the brain, and that almost killed me. And I had a broken femur. Those are some of the things that didn't get healed immediately. Those are some of the things I've got to learn from in my journey. And so probably when I woke up in the hospital, I was probably about two or three mentally. Couldn't remember things very well. I had problems remembering, you know, people would talk to me and they'd give me things. I couldn't remember that. I just, that's nice. Thank you. You know, like a little child. When they got me up on my feet to learn to walk, I didn't know how to walk. And I learned that my physical memory had gotten wiped clean. The only thing I didn't have to relearn how to do was crawl, because that's inherent in all of us. So when they'd gotten me up to take my first steps, and that was pretty scary and pretty tall, and I didn't know how to move my feet forward. You know, someone had to assist me with that. But there was a room I saw. And when I saw the room this way, I was looking at the room this way. And there were three men in the beds, and I knew exactly what was going on with them. I knew their names. I knew why they were in the hospital. As far as I know, I wasn't reading their charts. You know, I just knew. And I went, wow, oh, that's okay. And I was still getting my bearings and going, oh, wow. So later I realized the Halo experience brought back that I was in the ward where the people, paraplegics and quadriplegics were. And I was in this room. My guide had come to me and told me, he said, this was not your choice. You will be able to walk again. You'll be able to talk again. And I said, okay. And at some point I said, yes, I'll go back. And so I went back into my body. But I can remember that. I can also remember being at the top of an operating room. My guide was there too, telling me what was going on when they were operating on me. I found out later I was allergic to the anesthesia. And that's probably why I was at the top of the operating room. Because they were working on getting me to come back in my body. One of the things I remembered when I was in the hospital bed, and I was still on a full respirator, one of my doctors came to visit me and said a few things to me and worked on me a little bit. My doctor's here tonight. So Judy, thank you for coming. I love my doctor. She's been a miracle in my life. She came and worked on me when I was in the hospital. Made a huge difference because some of the things she shared with me, it was a miracle that I was in the hospital. It was a miracle that I lived from flying out of the vehicle. I have talked to police, and they say that when you leave a vehicle, it's pretty much 98% of the people are dead. Those are pretty strict statistics. For those of you who are wondering, my seatbelt failed. I always wore a seatbelt. In this case, I went out, and there were other things that happened because my seatbelt didn't work. When I first crossed over on this experience, is I saw my relatives. It was like a receiving line at a wedding. I remember they were like lined up. And it was really curious to me. I was just going like, and they were going somewhere, both sides of my family. That really didn't make a lot of sense to me. They would hug me and say, I love you. What are you doing here? My guide was standing there just being patient, just waiting for me. He goes, you're supposed to go with him, and then you get to go do some other things. And I went to keep following him. They'd say, no, you can't follow us. And I could see a ways off in the distance, probably about two or three football fields. And then it was a little lower where both sides of my family were creating circles. So that was really curious. And they wore white. They were just wearing white. Sometimes people wear the clothes they like to wear. I've had experiences where I've seen other people at other times. And most people like to wear what they're comfortable with. Like Jesus will wear a robe. Some people will wear, if they're from like the 1800s, they'll wear that. If they're from a different time period, they just wear what's comfortable. I imagine I'd be wearing this if I was on the other. Well, probably jeans or sweats because that's more comfortable. But my relatives were in white. And there's one great-great-grandmother. She's my fourth great-grandmother on my mother's side. I knew her. I know her face to this day. I see her face when I talk about this. And when I'm talking about this, I'm reliving it. I'm seeing my experience again. Every time I've ever shared or talked to anyone, I relive it. And sometimes I get more information. as each relative hugged me and said, "It's not your time yet, and what are you doing here?" I was just going, I don't know what I'm doing here. But they kept saying the same thing, you know, it was getting old. This one grandmother, she hugged me, and I remember her face. Now, back when this great-grandmother lived, there was no photography. I've actually found where she is in my lineage. But I do remember her distinctly, and I felt that love from her. When I was there, I felt immense love, unconditional love. I have felt it here, but only in certain experiences I've had. And when people say you would die to go there, yeah, it's true. Because I did feel unconditional love. So my relatives, I had that experience, and then I went with my guide. And I know that I talked things over with what I would call councils, because that's the word that comes up. I've learned a lot about what I would call Heaven 101. I'm in the process of writing books. First book, second book, we'll see. I've always known I was going to write about it. A couple of years ago, an old friend of mine who writes, assists people with writing books, she's agreed to work with me, and I'm really grateful for that because she's really good at what she does. It's like an interview style. I was told many years ago that whoever I'd work with my book, it would be like an interview style. So there was that connection there. So that's kind of like the middle part that I know I've experienced. I was also told at some point I will remember. I've had other experiences where I've remembered when I came back. So that beautiful green place I talked about, I've learned later that's called the waiting place. And everybody has a waiting place because I've been there more than once. That's the place I went to before I came back. It's the place to hang out before it's time, before the guide comes and says, "Hey," many years ago, my doctor suggested I go through a training that I went to. She promised me that if I went, I would heal quicker. I've healed for about 10 years, so to heal quicker was a good thing. Because at the point she talked to me, actually she had talked to me a couple years before, because I was seeing her for other issues in my life. The kind of like when I flew out of the car, whatever we were working on kind of went out the window. There was other things to work on. I had planned to go in January of 2000. I had that little flying experience kind of ruined everything. So about 14 months later, I went. For about the last 10 years, I go back and I staff regularly and I have powerful spiritual experiences. On one occasion, I'd come back into a room and I was having a remembrance. And I found myself on the other side. For me, it's kind of difficult to see the other side and see here at the same time, so I just closed my eyes. And then I was in the other place, and at that point, I was coming back. There was family and relatives, for lack of better terms, I'll just say my Heavenly Father, my Heavenly Mother, Jesus, some other people that I've come in contact with. I saw many family, and I saw people that if I didn't know them then, I know them now. I'll just say that people have come into my life. I get that kind of, oh, yeah, I'm okay. There are many times, one of the gifts I'll talk about is sometimes I can remember when I meet someone, I'll hear what they talked about when they chose to come to this earth life, what they said they were going to create. It's really beautiful. And sometimes I will hear that and I'll just go, wow, that was really cool. Thank you. I've had some experiences with healing, angels and beings of light, as I like to call them. Okay, so for me, people who cross over, people who die, pass away, to me, they're still people. They're still alive. People, we don't like to say that they're dead, because they're not. They're still alive. I just call them people. So my one therapist I used to go to, I was sharing a story with her that I had saw a child dressed in white. She was in a frilly white dress. And I was in this room, and she kind of walked, and there was a bunch of people. And this girl came over. She was just looking at this girl like she was her mother. She was just swaying back and forth. I saw the full image. Now, sometimes I see an outline. Sometimes I see a little bit. Sometimes I see color. Sometimes I see a whole being. I'm just grateful to see or hear or whatever. And my friend, She said, well, don't you think these people are coming to you for a reason? And I said, well, yeah, but I just like seeing them. She goes, well, why don't you talk to them? I was thinking, whoa, wait a minute. Talk to someone. What do you mean, talk to them? So she challenged me the next time I saw a being from the other side to talk to him. And so here is my opportunity. Here is this little girl. So I said, hey, little girl. I kind of waved at her. Hey, little girl. And because I didn't know her name. She was a little girl. And she was about this tall. And she was just swaying back and forth with her thumb in her mouth in front of this woman. And I just said, hey. And she turned around and her eyes got really big. Like, you can see me? I went, hey. And when her eyes got really big, then she turned around and ran away and disappeared into the wall. And I went, I guess she didn't want to talk to me. I don't know. I kind of felt bad. Later, I did talk to the woman who she was standing in front of, and because that woman was actually expecting at the time. She said, we're expecting a boy. I said, well, maybe she'll come down later on. I don't have the answer to that. I was just sharing. And so many times I share. I'll share another experience. A dear friend of mine, we were sitting in this room, and we're sitting down talking, and I said, excuse me, can I ask you a personal question? And she goes, sure, sure. And we'd been friends for a couple years, and I just said, I know this is really personal, but are you pregnant? And she goes, yes, why do you ask? Well, I said, well, you have a girl on your left-hand side and a little boy on the right-hand side, and they're standing on each side of you. And then the next question I asked, well, are you going to have twins? And she said, well, we haven't told anybody yet. It's possible. My husband, she shared a little bit that her husband really didn't want to have twins, that they only wanted one child. The children were kind of talking to me a little bit, but they kind of told me I couldn't really tell the mom what they were saying to me. They're not written down rules, but they're just some rules about it. I just learned that if they don't want you to tell the person, you don't. You get to honor their choices too. Later, the mother only had one child because the father didn't want to. You know, that wasn't up to me, but I did have fun seeing the children and talking to them and enjoying as I spoke with their mom. They stayed there the whole time. And then later the mom had to go and the children, they just disappeared. A similar gift that comes to me is I can recognize guardian angels sometimes with people, or I'll be talking to someone. And it's a gift I would call of communication with the other side. I've assisted a few friends when people have chosen out of this life by committing suicide, where the being has come back to resolve some sort of conflict with the person who was here on earth, who they didn't trust enough, or whatever the issue was, to facilitate some type of healing. And what it comes to me is that this is really about the healing of families. My father passed away many years ago, and he went on a trip to Scotland and never came back, and there was kind of a hole there. And it wasn't until many years ago when I went through this training I went to where I experienced my father. When I was on the other side, my father came to me, and he talked about when he was on this earth, he wasn't the man he was created to be. He wasn't showing up as my father. He was showing up how he was taught to be. It was just a really positive experience. And later on, I remembered that experience. My father now is my friend. If I want to talk to him, I can just kind of call him. You know, we just talk. Sometimes it's in dreams. Sometimes it's not. My mother once shared with me many years ago. She said that she had a dream once, and she saw her children shoveling gold into heaven. So I've had many experiences, but I'm going to cut it short here. And you can open it up for questions, I guess.
Yes, I'm kind of curious to know that the people that you saw when you were on the other side of the veil, I understand you met all your grandmothers and relatives, and they recognized you. Were there other people, too, that were not related to you or came to shake your hand or say hello or anything like that?
I've had other experiences. I'll just say the veil is very non-existent for me. And there's a lot of people I talk to. My normal would be someone else's twilight zone. Give an example. I was at a friend in Southeast Idaho, and we went to the cemetery where she wanted to share about her relatives. Well, I saw the relatives because they came to me because they know I'm open to talk. Because many times people don't visit. I'm not saying everybody. But there used to be a tradition many years ago where people would go and visit cemeteries to visit their relatives. And in particular, this friend of mine had a sister who died when she was 12. They were very close, but she always blamed herself for what happened. And the sister came to me and we had a conversation. And later, I was hiking with her that day, and later we had a time where I could talk with her about that. And as soon as I started to talk with her, that sister was right there. I knew how the sister felt, that it wasn't her fault, but she'd been carrying that weight with her whole life since she was 11, because they're only a year apart and they were very close. Broke her heart that day that her sister passed away. So for me, when I was on the other side, I think on the return journey is when I saw friends and family, future friends, that maybe I saw them but I hadn't met them yet. I have dreams all the time where I'll dream about people I don't know, but I know them. And then at some future point, I'll meet them and go, oh, yeah. Like, hello. Oh, okay. That's kind of my normal. I will share about something. The reason I brought about the gathering of my family is when I woke up and became conscious and finally talked to my mom. My mom lives in California. My mom shared with me that two of my aunt, her younger sister, passed away, and that my father's cousin, they grew up like brothers, he'd passed away too. And when I was in Palm Springs, that's where he lived. I wanted to go see him, but he was in the hospital, and he had later wrote me an email saying, we'll get together some other time. So when I woke up in the hospital, that's when I remembered. She told me, and I went, family thing, I remember that, and why they were gathering. Well, they were gathering to welcome people home. And I couldn't go there because my journey wasn't permanent. So I know a lot about things like that.
I think you partially answered my question already, that you said the veil doesn't exist, so you step on this foot, you're in the step on
this. No, it's more like 2 feet. It's like this, actually. No, it feels like this. It really doesn't. Some friends ask me, are you always on? I say yes. I don't want to turn the switch off. I think that's one of the blessings. I was given a very great motivation to heal. I'll just say that I had a really slow learning curve in the beginning. I was out of work for a long time. It is, and I talk to people all the time. Like sometimes people will talk to me and I'll be talking to somebody else who they're not seeing. But it may be a friend or family or an angel or a guardian angel. And they may want to communicate something to them, and I'd just be the vehicle. It's not about me.
Yeah.
But I hear it. I'll ask them. Sometimes I say, are you open? Sometimes I already know they're open. We'll just talk. It just depends.
Well, you talk about it as a blessing, but I mean, I see. How do you have a, quote, normal life? Isn't it kind of...
My life hasn't been normal since I crossed over the first time.
It's just your normal.
It's my normal. It's more than my normal.
Okay. Do you have problems fitting in with certain people or, you know, people who just don't understand where you were at?
I have an aunt. Now, in my family, my mom and her sisters grew up with cousins. They were all raised like sisters. So my second cousins are just like first cousins to me. We don't have any differential in my family. But I have an aunt who's actually my mother's cousin. She doesn't believe that I've crossed over. And that's okay with me. I just don't share. That's just how I look at it. You know, if people are open, I share. If they're not, I don't. I've been in situations where I was about to share. And these things are really sacred to me. I'm just really open. Because that's why I'm walking and talking. And I've been blessed that I can. The things that happened to me in the car were before I left the vehicle, I had a broken neck. That right there. That injury alone is enough, let alone a skull fracture or whatever.
You were quiet and the angels fixed it.
Yeah, and the angels healed some of the thing.
I'm going to go back to your earlier experience when you said you were about 3 and you were talking about seeing the planets.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know if you can narrow that down to me. Were you seeing just the planets in our own solar system, or were you seeing planets from other systems also?
I don't know if they were other systems. To me, I was just looking out at the universe. From that point in that experience, even when I later had the experience as an adult, the expanse is huge from that perspective. I saw the Earth. Now, as a child, when I was 12, I was up at this place we called the Hill. And there was a man who had made a telescope. He made it himself. He grinded the own glasses. And the sun hadn't gone down yet, but yet he showed me Saturn and the rings. He showed me the moon. He showed me from here all these beautiful places. So from that perspective, I could see the Earth. There were just planets and stars. Sandy. Hi, Sammy.
Hi, Brian. So what year was your accident?
1999, December.
So it was after the class?
Yeah.
Oh, my
yeah,
gosh.
Remember I disappeared for a while?
Yeah.
And I came back and saw you, and you went, where'd you been? And I said I had another NDE. And
oh, my gosh. Okay. The class, I was part of teaching that class.
Yeah.
In fact, Bill, you were one of the speakers at that class. Okay.
Yeah. I can't remember her name. I can see her face. Who wrote the book with Nibley?
Elaine Durham.
Yep. So Elaine, who's another experiencer who's wrote a book. This was before she wrote her book.
Right.
We were just walking one day after class, and I was walking with her, and she was saying, do you have problems with, like, balancing your checkbook, and do watches work? And all these things that I had attributed to just me being different, I was feeling being the same with her, because I love Elaine. She was wonderful to talk to. California is where I met Nibley, first name, who wrote the book with her.
Yeah.
Which Nibley?
Tom. Yeah.
So I met Tom. That's when Tom and I became friends, was when I lived in Glendale. He talked about the near-death experience in different levels.
And this was all before you.
This is all my last experience, but I'd had the childhood experience.
Right. So you knew and you remember that.
Yeah.
I got a couple of questions. I'm
sure.
Really curious about what you said about your dad. You said that you met your dad and he made it clear to you that he was not the person he was meant to be. How did you interpret that? Because I want to put words in your mouth, because I want, but tell me how you interpret
okay,
that.
So I know that I'm a spirit being of light, that inside I'm a spiritual being. One of the great shifts that happened in my life was this training I went through allowed me to shift out of my ego and to be heart-centered. And I've been heart-centered for over 12 years now. And that also allowed, being heart-centered, allowed that connection to be on and to live from my heart. My father walked this earth life. He always said, I cannot change. I am the way I am. I always said, you can change because I'm changing. And I was that kid that I was reading self-help books. I saw things in my father like my father had a temper. I told myself, I'll never have that temper. And I don't. There were things about my father, behavior, that because he's my father, I knew that I could inherit that. Well, I said no. So my father was a policeman, and at some point he worked in the L.A. County Jail. And when he was there, his boss was anti-Semitic and gave my father the worst things to do. And my father, even knew the chief of police was a friend of his, couldn't do anything until there was a changing of the guard, and then he got him a better job. At that time, there were a lot of policemen who were Jewish. But if their bosses were anti-Semitic, they got the lowest of the low. And my mom said that that's when my father changed. That's when he started swearing and just his behavior shifted, working with the worst of the worst of society. Understandable. He told me that he wasn't living. He chose different choices.
So am I interpreting that now he's on the other side?
Uh-huh.
And because he's on the other side, he now sees differently and is different. He's now the being he was meant to be.
Yeah.
Is that what you perceive?
Yes.
Okay.
So
wow.
Now when we talk as friends.
Right.
So when my father passed away in Scotland, that kind of left a big hole in me, because I never got to say goodbye. And in my family, the only time we ever had a physical connection, a hug, was when we went on a trip. I went on an LDS mission, and the only time I got a hug was when I left. When I came home, I didn't get one. So I never got to hug my dad goodbye when he left on the trip. And then he passed away and never came back.
So this was a healing to see him.
Really a healing experience. And then he visited me later on.
But I hope to give you a lot of hope by my conclusion and you confirming it, is that when we go through life, we make some poor choices. We become hurt. We become angry. We behave in ways that we truly sometimes don't understand. But through the process of going through this life and then passing on to the next, we can be redeemed. By that I mean we can see clearly that we truly are not that being, that we are something much greater and more beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
So we're all going to get there. Experience. Oh, good. Phew. Okay.
And Sandy, then by coming back, we can share that with others, that it's possible, like my friend and when I was in the cemetery, that I know that this friend of mine, she's in the Philippines right now, but when she comes back, we're going to have more conversations to heal what happened between her and her sister. She just wasn't as ready yet. And I knew that, but I can only do what I can only assist how I can assist. Now, most Jewish people think when you're dead, and there's nothing else. And I learned that at my grandmother's funeral. Yeah, it is a big deal. And it heals generations. That's the greater thing.
What about those who think when you're dead, and that's all there is to it? Do they go to the hereafter, too?
They do.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, they do. My grandmother, my dad's father.
She was an atheist?
No, she was Jewish. Close enough, I don't know. No. My grandmother had always been afraid of the dark as a child, always, even when she lived with us. I'll just say that my grandmother passed away, and 6 months later, my dad passed away. So it was like, ugh. But my grandmother, she was afraid of death because that's the ultimate darkness for people.
Based upon your experience, aren't we with our friends in the hereafter as well as family?
Sure. I've experienced family, and I've had some other experiences where old friends come and visit.
I want to make sure I'm sharing this. Some of us aren't LDS. We believe there are millions of planets in Heavenly Father's universe like the Earth. Based upon your experience, are there other inhabited planets?
You know, that hasn't been part of my experience, but I already know that
but
is.
You saw the planets.
I saw other planets, but they were numerous. If we were standing on that precipice before coming back to Earth, I just saw everything. I was just a kid in a candy store.
In my personal worldview, there are beings of light and also beings of darkness. Do the dark beings ever visit you, and do you ever talk to them?
As a child, I was visited a lot. I don't always talk about this just because it doesn't always make sense to me either. My background is being LDS, but I think I'm really flexible on whatever that means just because my experiences really don't fit in that box anymore. You know, I don't qualify things that way. Yes, I do. A lot of the experiences I have now have to do with sending dark beings to the light, for lack of a better way to say that. I've been in homes before where people, like I had an experience with a friend once. They said, we don't like going downstairs. There's been drugs and some other things. They just felt it was really dark down there. And when I went down there, it was really dark for a reason. There was a being, an individual, who when he died in that house, he didn't realize he was dead. He died by himself. And he was upset because he thought that was his house. And what are these people doing in his house? So he was upset. I saw his point. I thought, well. And I said, and we talked a little bit. And I said, well, do you know that you died? And he goes, I'm not dead. Do you know that you got really sick and then something happened that you noticed a change? And when I talked about that, he went, yeah. Yeah, I did. So we talked. And then I talked to some friends of mine who are angels, beings of light. Some people call them masters. They're just people I talk to. And so I got him to a point where he was ready to go to the light. Kind of turned him over and let him go on his journey. But it does take, sometimes it takes time to do that. And he did recognize, he did say something to me. He said, "Wow, you're really bright." You know, and I just went, "Yeah, I know." After he left, I got rid of one issue, and then I went through and cleared the rest of it out. But that's just something I know how to do. No one's taught me how to do that. I've talked to people, I've talked to other people since I've done things like that, who have maybe given me some more techniques. As a really young child, moved from Los Angeles to the San Gabriel Valley, and I grew up in the San Gabriel Temple City area. And as a very young child, I would see beings. Anyways, they don't have the same countenance, so they're, yeah, for lack of better means, they have less light. I like to call them less light because they're not dark. They just had a different experience. But they used to come and visit me. As a child, like, I never faced windows. So I grew up sleeping next to the wall. I couldn't really talk to my parents about stuff like that. You know, they were going to take me to the crazy land. And it's only as an adult that I've come to understand what really happened. But this is not the forum to talk about that. I just don't want to.
Were you going to tell us something about children shoveling gold into heaven?
Oh, that was my mom. My mom had a dream many years ago, and she said that she saw her children shoveling gold into heaven. She shared that with me. My mom, later on after my last experience, I could talk to my mom. There's a lot of things. I'd be told something, I could go and share that with my mom only, because most people weren't open to hearing what I had to share, and that had to do with relatives passing away.
Do you see spirits everywhere you go, or are there spirits in here now that you can see?
It just depends. I'm not going to say they're not here, because I know they're here because the room's really full. But I normally have that in certain situations. It's a little more prominent. There's these buildings I've been in, and they're really prominent there, whereas there are other places I go to, and it's a party. So are they here? Yeah. Can I see everyone? Well, I know they're here, but are they talking to me? No, I'm talking to you guys. Some people have been talking to me tonight. Yes, but that's just normal. You know, they said hello when I came. You know, I can't help that. Hi. Hi.
There's the spirits who have never inhabited bodies, but there are people, like you said, who had inhabited a body, passed away, didn't realize that he was dead.
Yeah.
And so do you talk to the ones that haven't had bodies and are just...
Okay.
Are those the ones that you send?
So let's differentiate for some things. What you're talking about is like a religious belief. The gentleman asked if I had had experiences with people who are of less light, and I have. Do I talk to them? Yes, I have. I don't. It's let me put it differently. Through my learning of these heavenly experiences, I've kind of set it up for myself that I only talk to beings of a certain vibration. I only want to talk to those who are of a very high vibration, who come into my space, because I really don't want to deal with other things. I don't claim to be a channeler. I don't connect to the astral plane. I know a lot about it. That's why I don't. Yeah, most people don't know about that, but let me just say I've had experiences, and I once had a friend kind of give me some coaching about make sure I'm connecting to a very high vibration of the people that I talk to. So it's more of a choice. I can if I want. I don't really want to. Possibly. It's not my place. That's kind of here nor there in my own experience.
Are you still seeing auras?
Oh, yeah. Oh, a lot of times when I see color, like, for example, if I saw red over there, which I'm not, but if I saw a color there, usually that means to me there's a being standing in the light. But if I see auras around people, yeah, that's just normal. And usually, now I'll be prompted to share with someone. Like, if I was seeing somebody's aura, I would go up and say, "You have a beautiful aura." 9 times out of 10, I see no color. I just see white light. But I've seen other colors, too. It's just being in the moment.
You know, I want to go back to your experience. I've read a lot of, not a lot about this, but some, and the way you described it, you were here, then you were kind of all of a sudden in this place where you could view the universe and all these. A lot of the other descriptions that I've read about, they talk about more of a light and a tunnel. Did you experience that as well, or is that just, did you just kind of shift over?
I was there, on my childhood experience, I was just there. I was in the water at one point, the next point when I was there. Now, on my second experience, I have had an experience where on my return journey, I went through a tube of light, but I walked into it. It was more like a way to go from there to the waiting place, but it was a tube of light, and in the light, there was color, which makes sense to me. So, yeah, on the way back.
Thank you.
When you see beings, do you see them in a physical, like a body type of a form, or do you see them in an orb? And if you see orbs, what are they?
I've seen orbs in pictures. Usually some people interpret orbs as beings. Usually it is a presence of light. I see anything from an outline to a full image. It just depends on the experience. Depends on who's talking to me. Like if I'm in a cemetery, everybody wants to come and talk. Doesn't mean I want to talk to them. I had a conversation with my mom and I said, you know, my great uncle's great grandfather, I just told my mom you ought to go visit their graves because they miss you. Because when I go, they're all there and they're just, it's a big party. But they said, hey, we miss seeing your mom. My mother's grandfather knew her as a child. I had a lot on my mother's side. There was 6 children who died during the diphtheria epidemic in the 1880s, and they died within about a 3-month period. And the only recollection we had of them is they had their pictures taken, and there are some paintings of them. But I know them very well.
I just had one question. As far as earlier, I thought you had mentioned that you were going to talk about the healing hands and how you were healed, and I don't think that you talked about that.
You talking about the angels? When I was in my, when I was being worked on, as I call it, I would basically just lay down on a massage table. My friend, her name's Kim, she would just use some oils, like box oils, flower essence, and then I'd start reliving stuff. I mean, we didn't even, I wouldn't even go and talk. It would just happen. So I was shown one day how when the angels basically caught me, there were many. And I'm not talking about 2 or 3. I'm talking about, you know, a lot. And what I saw was that from, for lack of better terms, from matter, everything's matter. But basically my heart was shattered. And I saw my heart got through light, using light. I saw my heart being rebuilt. And then, like, if we were doing a close-up in the body of the heart and then backing the camera out, in the business I call that a pool. I do video stuff, technical stuff. So I saw my heart being healed and then the matter being organized as backing out. And I saw my shoulders being healed. This arm was ripped out of the socket. I mean, I'm grateful it's attached, but I've already seen what I saw, that it was just flopping in the wind. So they healed that. My clavicle had broke down this way. When I left the vehicle, I couldn't fit in the sunroof. I raised the truck up 4 inches with my head when I left it. That's what totaled my vehicle. And I have a picture of my truck, and a lot of my injuries happened when I did donuts across the freeway because I wasn't held in by a seatbelt. I'd hit my head on all the windows. I knew my neck was broken. I knew when I left the vehicle to leave the vehicle. I'm flipping. My ankles were broken. I kept complaining in the hospital that I was really sore here. And when they did x-rays, you know, they just said, well, you look what happened. You probably are really sore. Like, hello. So, yeah. So I've seen that, and I've had other experiences in the healing process where I obviously this was pulled out. They put it back in. I later learned I had a broken pelvis. And The broken femur, it was fractured. It was broken in half. It was a compound fracture. I really don't want to relearn how that happened. I've never experienced it, and I don't want to, because I've heard it's pretty painful.
So, keeping in mind that you had Jewish and LDS in your upbringing, and when you talked about when you went to the other side, you sat on your Heavenly Father's lap, mm-hmm. and then you said something that really struck me. I grew up Catholic, so to me, Heavenly Mother would, of course, we all know what that would mean. But it made me feel good when you said that, and I wonder what your, if you don't mind sharing, what Heavenly Mother was to you.
Besides my Heavenly Mother, what do you mean?
What was she?
She was there. She was standing there. Like, they were actually sitting in
like
chairs.
Like a God being or a
woman
being?
Oh, yeah, 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 they're gods, yeah. Yeah, I say I was sitting on Heavenly. Some people have asked me, how do you know it's a lap? I go, what else would you be sitting on? But that's a different.
So
some people would ask me that. How do you know it's a lap?
That was man, God, and maybe she was a woman.
She was a female, yes. She was a female person. God was a man. That's why I say Heavenly Father. Mm-hmm. Jesus was a man. He was standing there talking to me.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Sure. You're welcome. That's that thing. Yeah. I felt immense love from Heavenly Mother. Yes. And I imagine she spoke to me. It wasn't my focus in the moment.
Brian, I'd like to make some clarifications. And you can, I know you'll go, oh, yeah, okay. Since we've talked about dark or evil spirits, I just want you to know this is not my opinion. I'm going to tell you something I learned. I worked under Kenneth Ring for a semester, and during that period of time, I was fortunate enough to answer his phone on many occasions. And I had people who would call to talk to Dr. Ring. This was at the University of Connecticut. Do you know who Kenneth Ring is?
Yes.
No.
Okay. Yeah, I do.
Okay. Kenneth Ring. Here, step back just a little bit. Kenneth. No, you're fine. You're fine. Kenneth Ring is one of the foremost authorities in near-death experiences. He was one of the founders of the International Association of Near-Death Studies. He's now in his late 70s and an incredible man, but his research and the work he's done has just been so powerful. And I was fortunate enough in the 90s to go and study under him. Well, let me tell you what he said about these negative dark beings of not light. How's that?
I just say less light.
Less light, yep. Well, one day a lady called in and she told me that she was really stressed because every once in a while these darker beings of light, not light, would come into her space. She had had a near-death experience and this stayed with her. I was really upset by it because up to that point, all of my experience had been in studying about near-death experience were about the positive. And I did not see or know that people had even dealt with that. And it opened up a new world to me. And so when Kenneth Ring returned, he happened to be away on a trip. And when he returned and I came in the office, I said, Ken, you've got to talk to me about this because I don't know what to say to people when they call. And they're telling me that they've seen these spirits. And she actually said they were not kind. They were not good spirits. And he said something so profound that has stayed with me, and I would like to share it with you. He said that if you are intrigued by those evil beings, they will come to you.
Yep.
If you find them to be quite amazing and alluring, it's like anything that's evil, guess what? It'll follow you, right? Like porn or anything else. I swear it follows you. Everything you see all of a sudden looks just like it. The bottom line is what he was saying was that when we invite it into our lives, it will come. What I was so impressed with was what Brian said. I don't even go there. I don't, unless the vibration or the light or their goodness or their beauty or their spiritual elevation is at a point of goodness, of sharing light and healthy spirituality, I don't invite it into my heart. Very important to remember that for all of you. Am I wrong or right?
No, that's true. If I face the light, I see only light.
I just want to tell you one other experience that's so powerful. How many of you remember Kimberly Clark Sharp? Kimberly is an amazing woman. And if you get a chance to read her book, Funniest NDE, in her near-death experience, she found that soon afterwards, every once in a while, evil beings would follow her and would just terrify her. And she said one day, and she was at home, and her parents had gone out, and she fell asleep on the couch. And when she woke up, there were these beings, huge evil beings that were there in front of her. She was terrified. And she said, all of a sudden, I realized they were just going to attack her, is how she felt. And she got up and she said, get behind me in the name of, and then she said the Savior's name. She said that what happened after that was the most amazing thing. She said, group of the most unbelievably huge angels came in and just scattered these beings into nothingness. And so she said from that day on, never did she have such a reoccurrence. Never did she have evil ever come into her space again. So you see, we have power to either invite it or not to be intrigued by it.
And the other thing is that light is always greater than dark.
Thank you for being the light and shining bright on us. Give Brian one more hand, one more big hand. Thank you.